Saga Egmont presents The Farlington Marsh Murders by Pauline Rowson. Read by Andrew Scarborough. Chapter 1. Tuesday the 7th of June, 3:20 p.m.
Anything? Detective Superintendent Uckfield asked hopefully.
Inspector Andy Horton shook his head and pulled at his black tie. Loosening his collar, he stepped into the shade of a tree in the crematorium gardens, hoping to find some relief from the burning sun and wondering what Uckfield, head of the major crime team, and Detective Chief Superintendent Sawyer of the Intelligence Directorate had expected they'd gain by a police presence. A weeping confession from the killer of Darrell Woodley while stood over his coffin? That would have been nice. But Horton knew that Woodley's handful of mourners would sooner have their private parts tattooed with a blunt and dirty instrument than confess to a crime. And grassing to the police was only one step below being a paedophile in their code. They'd got nothing out of them during the investigation into Woodley's death, and they'd get nothing now. And neither would the crime reporter from the local newspaper, Leanne Payne, he thought, watching her slim figure move amongst the mourners as they stood blinking in the bright sunshine like miners released from deep underground. She addressed a shaven-headed skinny man with tattoos up his hairy arms. Reggie Thomas, like Darrell Woodley, had been released from Parkhurst Prison on the Isle of Wight in March. When questioned, Reggie claimed to have no knowledge of why his former fellow inmate had been assaulted just off the Portsmouth waterfront 18 days ago, or why, after 3 days in hospital, Woodley had risen from his bed and somehow ended up dead at the Farlington Marshes to the north of the city 3 miles from the hospital. No one claimed to have driven him there. It was inaccessible by public transport, and he could hardly have walked that distance. Despite Uckfield's public appeals for information, no one had come forward with any sightings of Woodley, either where he'd been attacked or where his body had been found by a man walking his dog. Exasperated, Uckfield had declared, "Someone must have seen him. This isn't the Starship Bloody Enterprise. He couldn't have been beamed to Farlington Marshes." But it was almost as though he had been. The pathologist, Dr. Gay Clayton, had said that Woodley had died from his earlier injuries, a violent blow to the head and hypothermia. Hard to believe, with the temperature soaring to equatorial heights, thought Horton, plucking at the shirt sticking to his back. But a fortnight ago, it had been as cold as December. Uckfield sniffed noisily. "Can't think what they're doing here anyway. None of that lot had a good word to say about Woodley when he was alive." Did anyone? Thought Horton. Even the chaplain had struggled to find a kind word for the man who had lied, cheated, robbed and assaulted his way through his 47 years. Probably wanted to get their picture in the newspaper. And he'd witnessed some heartbreaking performances by them, worthy of an Oscar, put on for the benefit of the local press photographer, Cliff Wesley, who'd been snapping away on their arrival. "This is a waste of time," a sentiment shared by Horton. DCS Sawyer was going to be disappointed, he thought. Sawyer's department was also responsible for gathering prison intelligence, and Sawyer believed that the attack on Woodley had been carried out on the instructions of big-time crook Marty Stapleton, currently in Her Majesty's Prison Swansea, where he'd been transferred after Woodley had attacked him in Parkhurst in September. Horton had ventured the opinion that a crook as big as Stapleton wouldn't bother himself with low-life scum like Woodley, only to be told he would, because Woodley had humiliated him, and Stapleton, with a record of robbery, violence and extortion, wouldn't allow that to go unpunished. Horton guessed there was something in that. But watching Woodley's mourners shuffle off, he thought that Sawyer's hope of apprehending and gaining information from Woodley's assailant on where Marty had stashed the proceeds of his robberies was too optimistic. "Perhaps we should send Marty Stapleton some of Cliff Wesley's photographs," he said.
"Yeah, and while we're at it, we'll send him a signed copy of the video Clark shooting. Marty can watch that and have a good laugh."
Clark, the forensic photographer, was under Sawyer's orders, filming the occasion in a van with darkened windows under the trees in the car park at the front of the crematorium. Horton wouldn't have wanted to exchange positions with him in this heat. He saw D.C. Marsden cross to Liam Payne, who had lingered to jot down the words of condolence on the labels of the few floral tributes laid out on the cold slabs beside the aisle. They exchanged a few words and smiles before Liam Payne moved off in the same direction as Woodley's mourners.
"At least she didn't ask for a comment," Uckfield growled.
"Unless Marsden gave her one."
"I'll have his ball."